Welcome in, welcome in to the Mind, Body, and Spirit Show. It is Wednesday, February the 17th, May the 17th, 2017. This month is, again, just moving right on by. I keep saying there's something going on with this time. Seemed like it was just April and I was celebrating my birthday. I know I keep saying it, but that's what it seems like. But welcome in another day here. And Featherlight is not with us tonight, but we do have my good Black Power brother, Astro Ra, or Astro Black. What's happening, man?
Hello, good evening, brothers and sisters. Can you hear me?
Yes, 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 we can hear you. Welcome in to the Mind, Body, and Spirit Show. We're so pleased to have you here with us tonight.
Yes, Astro Black and On the Attack.
Happy Malcolm. On the
Attack. Have a very happy Malcolm X week and Malcolm X birthday on Friday.
Yes, it is. And Malcolm, again, one of my favorites. And today, celebrating, honoring Malcolm as our African spirit honoree. So, Friday. Celebrate Malcolm X's legacy, his contribution. Listen to some of his speeches or read some of his speeches.
Hello, Sister Shira.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Greetings, brothers and sisters out there in the world. Stay black, stay proud.
Stay black and stay proud. Always. Let me say hello to Scotty. Namaste, Scotty. I'm going to say namaste since Featherlight is not here. Namaste to you too, Scotty.
Namaste, hello. Black Rose and Astro Black. If I may say something about Malcolm, and man, Malcolm is my, if I don't believe in having idols, but if I had an idol, Malcolm X would be that. So let me just say he's my master teacher. His autobiography when I was in the Gulf War, thousands of miles away, it just really changed my life. Literally, it changed my life. It changed my worldview, and from there, it just put me on a path to learning, you know, about true black liberation theory and whatnot. But a mistake that a lot of people make, and I've made it in the past myself, is that we tend to focus on one period of Malcolm's life. That's that early Malcolm when he was with the Nation of Islam. And we don't pay so much attention to his thoughts post-Mecca. So while all of his speeches are important, it is important to examine his life in its entirety. But please take note of the journey and how he grew. Because I feel like no matter how old you get, there's still room to grow. So I just want to share that in recognition of Malcolm.
Well, Scotty, you know what? I have to say thank you, first of all, for sharing that. And I have to agree with you on that, because that's one reason why I myself love Malcolm so much, because of his development and the way that he evolved from Detroit Red to Brother Malcolm and El-Haj Malik Shabazz and Omar Wiley. So I love Malcolm for all of that, because I feel like that's my story, and it could be many other people's stories as well, because I always stress for us to evolve, learn something, become a stronger version of yourself. And that's what this show is all about. That's what Mind, Body, and Spirit is all about. Becoming a stronger version of yourself, helping you to reach that pinnacle, helping you to become enlightened, become aware, more aware, socially aware. And so thank you so much, Scotty, for sharing that. Thank you. Astro, you have a Malcolm clip for us, a Malcolm quote. I'm thinking about my Malcolm video I want to hear.
Yes, absolutely, and thank you, brothers and sisters. So look, addressing what Scotty was saying about Malcolm's triumphant return from the pilgrimage in 1964, Let's tune in to a short interview that he did at a press conference right upon his return, and what he had to say about how he's changed and what revelations he's had. Here we go.
Malcolm, have your experiences with white-skinned Muslims in Africa and the Middle East made you feel that the relations between Negroes and whites who are not Muslims is any more possible?
When I was on the pilgrimage, I had close contact with Muslims whose skin would in America be classified as white, and with Muslims who themselves would be classified as white in America. But these particular Muslims didn't call themselves white. They looked upon themselves as human beings, as part of the human family, and therefore they looked upon all other segments of the human family as part of that same family. Now, they had a different look or a different air or a different attitude than that which is reflected in the attitude of the man in America who calls himself white. So I said that if Islam had done that for them, perhaps if the white man in America would study Islam, perhaps they could do the same thing for him.
I think what a lot of people are interested in, Malcolm, is whether this experience has made you feel that your feelings have changed, that the animosity you have expressed in the past toward all whites.
There's one thing that I want to make clear. No matter how much respect, no matter how much recognition whites show toward me, as far as I'm concerned, as long as that same respect and recognition is not shown toward every one of our people in this country, it doesn't exist for me.
Hello?
Yes.
Malcolm put all the naysayers, the doubts, and the misconceptions to rest with that one quote, those two questions. And you can see in the way that the crackers who have the microphones are trying to ask him this very delicate question, they don't know how to phrase it. Malcolm, how do you feel about white people is really the question. He said, they're the same. But over here in the Muslim world, when they study Islam, they don't carry that I'm free, white, and 21 attitude around with them as they go. And then Malcolm said, as long as the respect and recognition is not paid for to my other brothers and sisters, it does not exist for me either. So let everyone who wants to paraphrase, misconstrue, or annotate anything that Malcolm has said this point forward know the truth as the truth-toter told it.
And the truth, they say, it'll set you free. So thank you, too, for sharing that, Brian Astro. Brother Malcolm, another point about him, he was just so remarkable in his speech and his tone and his knowledge and ability to convey our conditions to people. And I remember, like, listening to some of his speeches and watching some of the videos, some of the clips, and he would say, don't clap for me. He wanted to just go straight in and start speaking. And I've heard people say that he would just wave his hand and the crowd would stop with the clapping and the applause, and he would begin just belting it out. I would have loved to have been in Harlem to hear Malcolm speak. If I could go back in time, that would be one event that I would like to experience. Going to see Malcolm speak. And going to see Dr. King speak, Marcus Garvey. I would love to go to Harlem and see Malcolm speak. I would love that. Tonight, Astro, we are talking about culture. What is your definition of culture, and black culture in particular? Does it still exist? Are people even practicing black culture? Does black culture exist? Is it relevant to us? Is it more than just hair or wearing a dashiki what's black culture to you? We want to have a discussion on black culture and our parents sharing practices, cultural practices with their children so that they will know black culture. They can identify black culture and identify with black culture. I wonder about that. I really do. I wonder about that. Being a cultural anthropologist, I'm just into culture, right? And but black culture. I want to talk about black culture tonight. But before we get into that, Ryan, Astro, this is something, this story here, Mississippi Blacks Under Siege. I meant to bring this case up last week, and I did not. So we have a clip. Scotty, can we play that clip? This is a story about Mississippi Blacks being held up at checkpoints, unwarranted search and seizures. I mean, constitutional rights being completely violated. Some of these people, I was reading the article, some of the residents were stating that they were afraid to leave the house because they were often just accosted by police officers, just assaulted, terrorized.
Sister Black Rose, sorry to interrupt you. The last updated show content that I have a Monique interview, and then I have the El Haj Malik Shabazz clip. Am I missing a clip?
Okay, let me see.
Because I can't click on the one that you have in the chat room because for whatever reason, it will kick me out the chat and shut down my system. So I do need to talk to them about that. So if you could resend that via email, that would really be great. And I can get that on. Okay, here
problem.
It is. I found it. Mind, body, and spirit.
Okay.
Yeah, the additional clip. Before I play this clip, can I say something about culture? Please read the people the dictionary definition of culture. Because let me just say that black people fighting each other in a club is not black culture, okay? But I've actually heard people say that was black culture. That's not culture, people.
Really?
Yes. Fighting is not culture.
No.
Okay.
No. And we will read the definition on culture tonight for sure.
Okay. I have the video clip up coming up. Wait a minute. You want to play my report on this?
Yes.
Oh, I am so honored.
Yes.
All right.
Oh.
So this is American Citizens Under Siege in Madison County, Mississippi. This is a codified report. Learn what codification means in case you questioning the words that I'm using. I'm working on becoming more codified so that the enemy cannot use my words against me. Here we go.
Okay.
American citizens of Canton, Mississippi are under siege by the anti-American Madison County Sheriff's Department, according to a lawsuit filed on behalf of victims being assisted by the American Civil Liberties Union of Mississippi. The lawsuit demands that the court orders the Madison County Sheriff's Department to stop conducting unconstitutional checkpoints, unlawful searches of homes, and using excessive force as part of what the suit calls a coordinated top-down program to illegally target American citizens. Randy Tucker has been sheriff of Madison County, Mississippi since 2012 and claims to have dedicated his life to protecting citizens but has yet to comment on allegations that his department is targeting American citizens in what looks like another Ferguson, Missouri-like operation to rob citizens of their dignity and money to fill the county coffers. In one incident involving the targeting of an American family, six deputies stormed the home of the Manning family in attempting to force 35-year-old Kadhafi Manning to sign a falsified witness statement about an alleged crime he never witnessed. When Mr. Manning refused, deputies allegedly handcuffed, choked, and beat the handicapped man who uses a cane because of a nerve condition. Deputies called him Mr. Cripple, his wife said, and proceeded to drag him out into the street and into a patrol car, beating him until he wrote a falsified witness statement. Gaddafi and Quinetta Manning are among those suing the Madison County Sheriff's Department since the United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions has pledged to law enforcement around the country to not investigate or prosecute law enforcement departments and their employees accused of gross violations of the rights of American citizens. This has been Scotty Reed with a Black Talk Radio News Report. For more reports and commentary, visit BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com.
Americans. All right, so, Madison County, these black people for a decade have been dealing with this. Checkpoints, illegal checkpoints, basically, to me, like, very similar to slave cabin checks. Whereas these people think they can just come in your house and do whatever. Just violate you in any kind of way. Let me see. I did see the video with the man on, with the cane being choked. That was horrible. These people have had to endure all kinds of illegal searches and seizures. I don't know about seizures, but searches. That's enough. That's enough. I mean, it's 2017. And let me see, it says roughly 57% of Madison County residents are white and about 38% are black. And let's see, so the ACLU is involved in this case. Thank goodness somebody is standing up for these people. But when I read this, I said, good Lord, it was just too much for me. It was too much, too much. And then, I'm sorry, Astro, you have any comments on this story?
No, please continue.
Okay. And so this story, and thank you so much, Scotty, for that hot news clip on this story, because, man, when I read this, my heart was torn. And I've been meaning to call Mother Dunham because I think she lives near Madison County, I believe. But Mother Dunning is there in Mississippi. And Lord knows they're still being poisoned by that Gulf spill there in Mississippi. That's another lawsuit those people need to put forth. But this case, coupled with what I read about what's going on in North Carolina with the hog farms liquefying the hog waste, spraying it like rain on the black community. And the children are complaining, saying, you know, the children are questioning, why is it that this liquefied hog waste is being sprayed in their direction? And so it's causing all kinds of health problems. And even if it wasn't causing any health problems, the fact that you're spraying some hog waste, environmental poisoning, and the companies have come together so that, let's see, the residents can actually be compensated as they should be. I forgot the legal term for that, but there's like a cap on their compensation if they were to sue, which I think is completely egregious. Completely egregious. So when you look at this case, and when you look at the case in Mississippi, and then there was another instance in another case with a young lady in North Carolina. Now, Scotty, you tell me if you heard about this. Astro and I were speaking about this. There's a young lady, a teenager, rather, in school, and she's being assaulted by some other young, it seems like, white males in the video. Her mother is speaking out about the case because her daughter, like, suffered a contusion. She was hospitalized, I believe. And I'm just wondering, is this really happening to these children? And I mean, the community is not coming together. I don't watch corporate media, so I don't even know if they're talking about this story on the news. I really don't. but I'm not even hearing many people in the black community talk about this. So I'm just wondering,
this the first I've heard of it, Black Rose, and thank you for sharing it. And if you could send me the links to that video, I definitely want to put it out to my peeps here in North Carolina. I thought you were about to ask me about the young lady who shares my last name. I've forgotten her first name that fast, but her last name is Reed, and she was found hanging from a tree in a park. And the coroner here in North Carolina, she was a student at Winston-Salem State, HBCU. She was found hanging in a tree in a public park. And the coroner, without even conducting an autopsy, ruled her death a suicide. Very young, beautiful black sister. The family and her friends are not buying that she would have killed herself.
Right. I did hear about that story, too. I did mean to inquire about that one with you as well. I can't believe it. I can't believe I'm not really hearing. I mean, my circle, we talk about these stories, but it's like I really don't hear the outrage. Like we heard about this young man that pushed the old lady in the pool and all of this, and he turned himself in. I heard a lot of talk about that, but why are we not hearing about this? This is another young lady, as you mentioned, in North Carolina, found lynched, said it was a suicide, same case with Leonard Lacey. Leonard Lacey was over there in North Carolina as well. I don't know if anybody remembers that case. I know we have short memories, but Leonard Lacey was a young man. He was dating some older white lady, and he was found hanging from, I think, a clothesline. Now, how you hang yourself from a clothesline? And then he had on some tennis shoes that were like two sizes too small. So that in and of itself would seem like it's suspicious. And his mother and uncle said that I believe he had on some like new Air Jordans or something, and somebody took the Jordans off him and replaced his shoes with some other tennis shoes. But these young people are being found lynched all across the country. I'm like Ida B. Wells. It doesn't just happen in Mississippi or Georgia. It's happening all over the country. And my question is, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to organize? Are we going to protect our communities? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I am going to put out my challenge again tonight, my challenge to black men. Yes, I have a challenge to black men. And I will share that tonight again. Let's see here. I also want to talk about Astro, this unique video that was released. Because I do want to applaud Monique for speaking up about how she was treated in Hollywood and what many black actresses and actors, period, lesbians, have to experience in terms of the low pay, not being able to gain equal work in their craft. So, Scotty, if we could load that video, the Monique clip. It's been floating all around the internet. So if you have not heard about this whole deal with Monique and Tyler Perry and what she said about Tyler Perry and I think Lee Daniels and Oprah Winfrey, my goodness, you're here tonight. If Scotty can play the video for us.
Yes, just waiting on the ad to allow me to skip it.
Okay, all right.
Okay, here we go.
And the scripts were coming. And when people say, Monique, where have you been? It's not that I haven't been on TV or been in the movies because I've been blackballed, as Mr. Daniels has said. The offers just didn't make sense, Dawn. So, again, the phones didn't stop ringing and the scripts didn't stop coming, but the offers that were associated with them were offers that made me say, guys, I can't accept that. Because if I accept that and I won the award, what are my sisters being offered that didn't win the award or wasn't nominated? And what does it say to the little girl who's not here yet that if we continue to accept these low offers, however, do we make it different and make a change?
Okay, I want to play this. This was Lee Daniels on this very broadcast last night. Let's listen.
Okay.
We were on the campaign, and she was making unreasonable demands. And, you know, and she wasn't thinking. This is when reverse racism, I think, happens. You know, I said, you have to thank the producers of the film. You have to thank the studio. And I think she didn't understand that. And I think that, and I said, listen, people aren't going to respond well if you don't. So I love her, and I've spoken to her, she's brilliant. And I like working with brilliant people. But sometimes artists get in their own way. I think that there were demands that were made from her on the Precious campaign that everyone knows about that hurt her. And I told her that.
Can she change that?
I mean, if she plays ball, got to play ball. This is not just show. It's show business. And you got to play ball.
What's your reaction, Monique? You didn't play the game. You had difficult demands.
I want to address it for the order that it went in. And when Mr. Daniels say I had these demands, it shocked me because I was saying to the screen, Don, please ask him what the demands were. Mm-hmm. And actually, there were no demands. There was a request from the movie studio, and they called and requested that I fly to France for the Cannes Film Festival. I simply said I respectfully decline, because if you can remember at the time, there was a talk show called The Monique Show. I was doing a comedy tour. I was actually in the award season of the awards, and I'm also a wife, and I'm a mommy. So when they called, I had a couple days just downtime. I wanted to spend that with my husband and my kids. So when we said we respectfully decline, the movie studio called back again, and they said, okay, well, we'll upgrade her hotel room. And my husband simply said again, we respectfully decline. She's going to take this time mm-hmm. with her family.
Yeah.
Well, when the third call came and they said, what is it going to take to get Monique to France to the Cannes Film Festival? And my husband said, is there a number associated with it? And they said, oh, we would never pay for anyone to do any promotions for a movie. And we said we understood, because what people didn't know was I was paid $50,000 to do the movie Precious. And it really wasn't about the money, and I'm not complaining, because I signed up to do it with my friend.
Yeah, but so you're saying that because you didn't have the money to do this on your own. Is that what you're saying? That you needed to feed your family and pay your bills?
I think that's what America says.
Yeah.
I think we all say, I can't do it for free.
Right.
So when the movie studio says we can't set a precedence and pay you to do this, we didn't have an issue with them.
Okay.
But that's when the reports came that now Monique is being demanding and she's being difficult. They had a request. We simply had a request. And they said they couldn't do it, and we said we understood. That was it.
All right, and that was Monique. That particular clip did not have her actual show on Mother's Day when she basically just clicked on Tyler Perry, Oprah Winfrey, and Lee Daniels. She said that she was white-balled by some black people with no balls. So, Monique, I applaud you, because it takes a strong person to stand up to some Hollywood quote-unquote greats like Tyler Perry and Oprah Winfrey and Lee Daniels. So my thing also is, I remember the young lady that used to play Victoria on Young and the Restless. A couple of years ago, she was speaking out about how black actresses were not paid equally to their counterparts. In addition to that, I think it was Yvette Carnell that was speaking on this whole subject also, speaking about how Tracee Ellis Ross, who's won all these awards on that show Blackish, which I did start watching Blackish a little bit, she's won all these Emmys and awards, accolades for the show Blackish, but she's not being paid nearly as much as someone like one of these people on Friends or something, because I think when Friends was a hot show, those people were being paid like $1 million an episode. That's $4 million a month. So anyway, you go, Monique, get your money, and Monique will make her money through some kind of way, her radio show, her comedy shows. Monique, you will be fine. You will be just fine. So, anyway, I just had to speak on Monique. Ryan, anything you would like to share? And anybody else can call in and share their thoughts on any of these topics tonight. Monique, stories out of North Carolina. Please, 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 people, talk to your children about how to defend themselves verbally and physically. Because when somebody comes to your child with that mess, they need to be able to shut them down one way or the other. And if the school, the school board, the school district, if the school district is not taking action, then you take legal action. That's what I would say. I wouldn't have my child in school being terrorized by some terrorists, humiliated. So, those are my thoughts. What's up, Astro?
What's up? Yes, brother. Look, as a global people, we're in the worst situation that we've been in for close to 200 years as black people across the planet. Our sisters are under severe attack, and you're asking about what black community is, black culture is. We definitely have culture. Everything is black culture, quite honestly, especially everything that's American, quote-unquote American, has come from black culture in one way, shape, or form, as we are the original people on this continent as well. But we need to protect our sisters, and our sisters and brothers need to get together and band for the security of our nation, because the nation can only thrive through the black woman. And the white supremacist agents of terrorism are fully aware of this, and then also because it's the weakest link, physically speaking, women are being attacked in public spaces without any kind of hesitation. And we're seeing this in Korean nail salons. We're seeing this in Mexican restaurants. We're seeing this by the police in the schools and in the streets in our community centers. We have to realize that as black people, we are the main spoils of war against humanity. We are in a war, and as soon as we realize that, then we can act accordingly, protect our women, and build our nation, okay? I'm filled with horrendous and violent rage anytime somebody puts a hand on a sister, and I've done it before. That cannot be allowed to continue. It's completely unacceptable. And it's part of, again, rebuilding our black nation is securing the trust and confidence as black men that our women have in us for their protection and for their security's sake.
Well, let me ask you this. You being a man, how do you think that we can inspire, motivate more men to have that as a priority, protecting black women?
I don't know how to inspire people who are do nothings. You know, there are a lot of black men out here who are about protection and security and self defense, and So those men and those men need to respond accordingly in situations, especially in the heat of a moment, to defuse, de-escalate, and protect our sisters. I believe that you lead by through action, and there are a fair number of brothers out here doing it as well.
Well, let me share this. I have a challenge, and I'm calling this my challenge to my beloved black brother. I am asking men to sacrifice or relinquish one day occasionally of watching sports, to get together and organized to protect us. Or when you guys finish watching the game, can you get with some brothers and organize to protect the black family? Because we need this protection. We really, really do. Our girls, as we just spoke about, are being attacked constantly. I mean, even not even just the young girls. What about that old man, 73 years of age, and was stabbed by that man that so-called came from Baltimore to New York to just kill black people? So, I am asking, can our men please come together and work to protect us? That's my black brother challenge. I hope my black brothers can stand up to that challenge. We're hoping that you do. I have a...
Can I answer your question?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but you're asking some good questions, and I need to answer that question about how do we get black men... Ask your question again.
Okay, how can we motivate more black men to want to protect the black family, want to protect black women and their children?
Okay.
In our community.
This is my answer. And it is something that more and more people, grassroots activists, are tackling and are seeing some successes. So I don't want to say the issue isn't being addressed, but the number thing that I would say is first get them to stop listening to rap music that dehumanizes the black woman, because nobody wants to protect, and this is, you know, it's after 10, so we hope the children in the bed, but I'm going to keep it real because it's a serious question. You are not going to be willing to protect a bitch and a hoe. And if all you hearing about the black woman is she a bitch and a hoe, then you're going to devalue her. You're not going to see her as a member of your family. You're not going to see her as your mother, your sister, your aunt. You're going to see her as a bitch and a hoe. So that will be the first thing, is to get them to stop listening to that type of music programming. That's my answer.
So one first step would be the music. And just to dovetail that, I would also say being able to see some examples in the home or in your environment of male and female, black male and female interaction and interfacing in a pleasant, harmonious way. And then I think that when children see that, and then they can grow into that, I hope, maybe. But the music thing, yes. Yes, yes. There's quite a few songs and some artists that produce music that is very
it's club music, Black Rose.
It's
club music, and I just want to add one more suggestion because this is a family problem. Mm-hmm. So women, black woman, you have a tremendous influence over us, and you have a hold on us. Okay, so in the club, if you're a clubber, when that music that comes on that dehumanizes black women, how about when the guy come to ask you to dance, you say, wait, there's something better, come on. Don't dance to that music that's dehumanizing you. So that's something for men and women to do.
Well, you know what? I'm coming from a woman's perspective. I have to say this too, Scotty. I tell you, it breaks my heart sometimes because, say, for instance, when I go to the store and I park and I'm getting out my car, someone pulls up next to me, and I hear this grating music, that bitch this and hoe and all of this stuff, and shoot you, beat you, whatever. And then I look over there, and it's a female. It's a young lady. And I'm like, really? And sometimes they even have their little baby in the back seat. So it's like, how do we stop that? How do we change that? So I agree with you in terms of women, we first need to change, I would think, because we will impact men Because if a woman starts saying, look, you need to pull your pants up, or I don't want to hear that while I'm riding with you, or don't say those words around me, change your language, or go, just don't deal with them. Just exclude them. And then change will come. Sounded like Sam Cooke, change gonna come. But what do you think, Astro? Let's hear your perspective.
We need to look at ourselves as a family. And when I see a young 14-year-old, 100-pound sister in a bikini being body slammed by a cop in Texas, pool party, or lynching in the South or in the North, wherever it's happening, or the fact that child slavery has returned in the failed state that Libya has been bombed into by NATO, U.S., and other European former colonial forces, we realize that those are your brothers and sisters. And when you do that, when you actually look at them as your own brothers and sisters, then you will have the necessary inclination, inspiration to act accordingly. And so we need to look at each other as one family.
Looking at each other as family, that's a good point too, because when you look at someone as family, then hopefully you'll feel a connection with them. And this is not someone that you could just kill senselessly or disrespect. You're more motivated to assist them with their troubles rather than cause more trouble. And I think that's a good segue into, let me read a Malcolm quote and segue on into our topic, culture, because it feeds into culture. Here's a quote from Malcolm. My alma mater was books, a good library. I could spend the rest of my life reading, just satisfying my curiosity. Brother Malcolm X, Elhaj Malik Shabazz. Love you. Love you, love you, love you. Culture. Let's talk about culture. Here's a definition of culture. Culture, or civilization, taken in its broad ethnographic sense, is a complex whole which includes knowledge, belief, art, morals, law, custom, and any other capabilities and habits acquired by a person as a member of a society. And that's from Tyler. Tyler actually developed that anthropological definition of culture based on some other early anthropologists. Culture basically is like the spirit life of a group. It's all of your customs and traditions and ways that are passed on to you. That's what your culture is, essentially. And black culture. Just a little bit about black culture. There's a lot of talk about vaccinations. You see so many children that have these developmental disabilities. Autism is on the rise in so many children. And I remember mothers in California had come together and they were fighting the pharmaceutical companies about forcing the children to have these vaccinations. Well, in African cultures, in some African cultures, there's so many different African cultures. Just the plethora. We can't just think of the peoples of Africa as just one monolithic culture. There are various cultures. In some of the cultures in Africa, the vaccinations were like scarring. You would scar the tissue with special blades. This was like a ritual. So for us to be forced as black people, because I'm always talking about this cultural assassination that we have to endure here. But for us as African people, having to have some of these shots that we're forced to have, that's harmful to us. And research has been conducted on this. I think, what's his name? One of those Kennedy brothers actually speaks on this. I should have uploaded that clip. We'll do that another day. But one of those Kennedy brothers actually speaks on this, how the pharmaceutical company is aware that those vaccinations that are required by children are extremely harmful, not only to just children, but in particularly to African-American boys. So this ties back into not only cultural assassination, but also the fact that this is like a plot for the destruction of black civilization. Once again, everything always ties back to that. So the vaccination, the whole vaccination business, that's not our culture. Not those types of vaccinations. Not in that method. Our eating habits, that's part of our culture. Now, a lot of people may say, yeah, our culture is eating collard greens and fried chicken and yams. Yeah, that's part of, you know, black culture, maybe quote-unquote plantation eating, I would say more so plantation culture. But like our eating habits, completely different, like this lactose intolerance that a lot of African Americans. Astro, are you lactose intolerant? Can you drink cow's milk?
Yeah, I can. I'm not intolerant.
Oh, you mean to tell me you drink cow's milk?
I didn't say that, but I eat cheese.
Okay. Usually when people become around the age of 25 or 26, African Americans, they become lactose intolerant after 25 years of drinking cow's milk. So, but again, that's like cow's milk, that's not really our culture. I think more Africans would drink goat's milk or coconut milk. I drink a ton of coconut milk. I use coconut milk in my smoothies. But dairy is extremely harmful to our bodies. So I tend to use the vegetarian cheese. Don't drink cow's milk. I drink the coconut milk. I don't even drink the almond soy milk anymore. So, yeah, just mentioning the whole habits of eating, just that's a different culture. We have a different culture in terms of our eating habits. Said the Light was going to share some really good differences in our culture from other people, but hairstyles. You know, we can talk about hairstyles. Our culture has always had just different types of hairstyles, and that's another cultural assassination attack that's going on with us. I was reading this other story recently about two young girls. I don't know if you saw this story, Astro. I think it's like two twins. I think their school is trying to suspend them for their braids. And we hear these stories all the time about these young girls or adults not being able to wear their natural hairstyles. And for so many years, we've not been able to wear our natural hairstyles. But what hurts me so much is, like, now you hear you take that weave out your hair, wearing that weave. Well, for one thing, we've been made to feel that our hair is ugly. So that's number one. And number two, when we did try to wear our hair in a natural, we weren't able to be employed. So many women had to assimilate and straighten their hair. So, Ryan, do you hear a lot of Astro? Do you hear a lot of brothers talking about sisters that wear weaves? And what are your thoughts?
Look, a lot of brothers is want a black woman, a decent black woman, natural black woman. But we're not nearly as picky as being men. We're not really all necessarily all that picky about the ins and outs necessarily. I mean, but, you know, the style, the hair, all these things, the things on the outside sometimes, oftentimes reflect what's on the inside. So, sisters, do what you do, but stay black and stay proud.
Stay black and stay proud. But Ryan, how can they stay black and stay proud when they're constantly under attack about their hair? What is a sister to do?
Well, first of all,
I can't even wear locks now.
Well, look, first of all, we're the most excellent, virtuous, and quite frankly, original people who created civilization. The naysayers and the rhubarb that you get from others, especially those who don't have your best interests at heart, you don't really need to listen to them. And you be selective about who you're trying to please and who you're not. And that's a personal decision that each and every adult has to make on their own.
This is true. This is true. But for some people, just in that same vein, I think it's quite difficult. Well, not I think, I know. Because I've spoken with some sisters who say, I wish I could go natural. Oh, I wish I could do that. I just can't do it. Oh, my hair is so difficult to deal with. You know, we've been taught that our hair is difficult to deal with. And it comes from when you are 7 or 8 years old and your mom starts applying these creams and relaxers to your hair. So young girls begin early with this thought that there's something wrong with me because my hair has to be altered in order for me to be pretty or to be accepted. And so that carries on into your adult life. And so as black women, we grew up with this psychological trauma dealing with our hair. And thankfully, so many black women now are beginning to embrace their natural hair. It's beautiful. I love it. I'm loving seeing this. I've been natural for, gosh, I don't even know now, about 20 years. But I remember when I first went natural, it was primarily black women that insulted me. And when I say insulted, I mean insulted me. Tell me it was ugly. Why did I cut all my hair off? And what am I going to do? And why don't I straighten my hair? What if I can't get a job? I heard all those kinds of comments. And I was like, oh my God, really? And so many women do experience that. But, I mean, our culture, back to culture, our culture is our hair. That's part of our culture. Having that afro, or having that natural, or having those braids. Having those elaborate hairstyles. And now when men say things about weave and all of that, I always try to direct them to many African cultures did wear different types of hair extensions. It may not have been somebody else's hair, but there were different materials that people would apply to their hair for elaborate hairstyles. I mean, so we've always been like that in terms of extensions in our hair. Some African culture, not all. So just adding that. But anything else you'd like to share on our culture line before we take a quick break? Black culture.
Black culture is the most mass sold, mass reproduced, and copied culture. When I say black, because we're global people who's original on all continents, whether you go to Asia, whether you go to Mother Continent Africa, in the South Pacific, we have a myriad of black nations, including Hawaii. And also here in the heart of the Neo-Roman Empire, black culture makes this business, this capitalism run. Okay, your looks, your sound, your style, your music, your food, your art, your writing, your speaking, your voices, your melanin in the cells that you have in your body. All these things are so cool and so popular. if everyone around the world who's not black felt the same way about black people that they do about black culture, we'd have no problems. We'd be the most loved people. But again, as Don Hunter Clark said, everyone coming to Africa wanted to take what they couldn't live without, and felt no reason to pay for it. We're the mothers and fathers of global civilization. Remember that, brothers and sisters. Everyone's looking at you because you are the trailblazer, the leader, and the superstar of this intergalactic stage that we're on here.
Say that. Black culture is beautiful. It is beautiful. Black culture is me, and I am black culture. And you are listening to the Mind, Body, and Spirit Show. And as we go to break, log on to Black Talk Radio Network. You can sign up for BTR, the Social Media Experience, the Black Talk Radio Social Media Experience. Astro, you should sign up for BTR. It's, I think, $25 for the year. It's like Facebook. If you like being on Facebook, you can sign up for a BTR account and, hey, connect with some people. So, we'll be right back. You're tuned in to the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show.
Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
We are back here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Show, and this is Black Rose, and Astro is here with me tonight. Astro, what's up? How you doing?
Great, brothers and sisters. Glad to be here with you.
We're so glad to have you here with us. Feather Light is out tonight, so everybody send in your little prayers for her. She's not feeling well. You know, here in Texas, in Houston, they have all of these chemical plants, and this area that I live in, they call it the Energy Quarter. But I tell you, the pollen around here in Houston, Texas, is ridiculous. I never suffer from any kind of allergies or sinus problems until I moved here to Houston. And I know people told me, you'll begin to have allergy problems and sinus and all of that. And I was like, I did all this time. I won't get it now. But, yeah, I do. So it's like something going around all the time here in Houston, or either it's allergies. So I'm hoping that it's just a little allergy flare-up with Feather Light, and she'll be fine. But in her absence, I will read this piece that she has from Tina Knowles, who is Beyonce Knowles' mother. Tina Knowles on Solange's album speaks about being black. So I will read this in Satellite's absence. This is her piece. Tina Knowles says, I think part of it is accepting that it's so much beauty in being black. And that the thing that I guess I get emotional about, because I've always known that, I've always been proud to be black, never wanted to be nothing else, loved everything about it. It's such beauty in black people, and it really saddens me when we're not allowed to express that pride in being black. And if you do, then it's considered anti-white. No, you just pro-black, and that's okay. The two don't go together, because you celebrate black culture, does not mean that you don't like white culture or that you're putting it down. It's just taking pride. What's irritating is when somebody says, you know, they're racist. That's reverse racism. Or they have a Black History Month, but we don't have a White History Month. Well, all we've ever been taught is white history. So why are you mad at that? Why does it make you so angry? That is to suppress me and to make me not be proud. Okay, a few points in this particular piece. Goes back to the reverse racism. Scott and I were speaking about this, what Lee Daniels mentioned in reference to Monique with this whole reverse racism. And that's something that we could not allow people to trap us with. There's no such thing as reverse racism because we don't have any kind of power or control over anybody else, black people, in terms of affecting them socially or financially, economically or financially. So, no, there's no, to me, there's no such thing as reverse racism. And so don't get trapped into that whole reverse racism crap. And I'm so disappointed in Lee Daniels for saying that about Monique, reverse racism crap. Give me a break, Lee Daniels. You need to stop. You need to have a seat. But when she mentions just being pro-black and that's okay and celebrating your culture, I don't think that we're allowed to celebrate our culture as we should. And I don't think that we've been inspired or taught to celebrate our culture as we should. I see some groups, some silos of people. You have people that celebrate Kwanzaa or people that may practice in some type of study group studying black culture and practicing black culture, but as a whole, Astro, as a whole, do you think that if we adopted more of a practice in our culture, that that would advance us in some way of bringing us out of this oppression, of this oppressive nature that we're in? What are your thoughts?
Look, take all the doubt out of that question. Okay, look, Malcolm X's birthday is coming up on Friday. Here's one of his quotes about the situation. He said, on the topic of white people in America specifically, he was saying, they're vicious in their whiteness. But still, I would not judge them because they're white, because they call me a racist in reverse. I judge them by their deeds and their conscious behavior. This is what Malcolm said after his triumphant return from the Hajj in Mecca. Let's be very clear, there's no such thing as reverse racism. The reverse of racism would be justice. American government, any of these neocolonial or pre-colonial or colonial European nation states as they exist now are incapable of creating justice. And are incompetent in even the definition of justice. But our culture, our languages, our belief systems, spiritual belief systems, our family units are the foundation of the black nation. So I'm not here to please anybody, okay? I'm not trying to here to please any of these others. Black people is the number one priority. Okay?
Okay. Number one priority. Black first. Black first. Black first. Black first. I agree with you on that. And we should just focus on not trying to please anybody, but just being the best person that we could be. And work together as a family, as you stated. I can believe in that for sure. For sure. And in terms of us working together as a family, back to my whole challenge, protecting each other, being there to help each other and protect each other. We've got to get back to that. And I know that all of us can't be unified and on the same page. That may not be possible, but if we're all working towards liberation, can we just work towards liberation? And freeing ourselves from this oppression. Free the land. I'm back to my free the damn land and free all our political prisoners. That's my call. So culture. What are some more things about culture, black culture? Parents teaching their children about black culture. What can we teach our children? What are we sharing with our children about black culture? Do people sit down and talk to your children about blackness, being black, what it is to be black, what you should expect being black, how you should behave as a black person, your beliefs as a black person, your actions, practices, customs, your ways, your experience? Do we even have those conversations? Do people have those conversations with their children? I wonder. Do we have those conversations with our friends? You have those conversations, Astro?
Of course I do. We're having one right now. Of course I do.
Well, you know, we do. We do. In our circles, we have these kinds of conversations. I wonder about other people.
Maybe we should take some callers.
Well, let me see if we have a caller. Let me see if we have a caller. We don't have a caller right now. Maybe I should give out the number. Let me give out the number so people can call in if you have some comments. 866-510-9. Oh, goodness, I'm messing up the number. Wait a minute. 866-510-9025. You can call in. You can share your thoughts on any of the stories that we've spoken of tonight, any other cases. I really want to hear some more discussion around what's going on with the people in North Carolina with this liquefied hog waste. Why are people in uproar about this? Where are all the environmentalists that were marching on the fossil fuels and all the... Where are those people? Marched on this. This is an environmental hazard. This company is not disposing of their waste properly. So, where are the environmentalists on that? Where's Sierra Club? They should be out marching on that. Go do something about those people over there. And this, the two young ladies that have been attacked in North Carolina. Love to hear some more people talk about that. I would love to hear what we're going to do about that. Anybody have any plans on that? Is anybody assisting the family? Where are the black lawyers? Who can come out and support? Anybody have any ideas on what we can do? How we're going to handle this? So we just let our children get lynched, urinated on, abused in class, stuff from terrorists? You remember that story, Astro, about the young man in Navasota, Kendrick Johnson? He was like a football star on his team. And the investigator said that he fell into the mat. But there's, you know, suspicion that there were two brothers that actually killed him. But their father is like a local FBI agent, so there's... The whole case has just been basically just killed because of the father's connection. And so I don't understand how we just can allow our children to continuously be attacked in school or at a pool party. As you mentioned, Astro, the young girl in McKinney, Texas, I remember when that happened. And then we just didn't really hear much anything else about that. Other than one of the girls, she was offered a modeling contract. So I guess that was to shut her up and keep her quiet about it. But like the other young lady, the one that was actually attacked by the cop, I wonder what happened with her. I mean, whatever happened. I don't think the cop was fired. Nobody attacked him. Nobody attacked his dog, his child. I'm not promoting violence. I'm just saying. I mean, do you just allow people just to attack you? I mean, even America, when America feels like it's being possibly threatened, even America's ready to go nuke somebody. So we just allow people to attack our children now? Is that where we are? Sad day. Sad day. Now, I know that's not our black culture. We're not going to let that be our black culture. So, let me see. I have another Malcolm quip to play, Astro. And this is, Patty, if we could get that clip ready. Malcolm X, Elhaj Malik Shabazz, is our African spirit honoree. We'll transition into talking a little bit about Malcolm also. Malcolm was born Malcolm Little on May 19th, 1925, in Omaha, Nebraska. He was born to Louise Norton Little, who was a homemaker, and his father was Earl Little, who was an outspoken Baptist minister and an avid supporter of black nationalist leader Marcus Garvey. His family, his parents were Garveyites. Let's see, Earl's civil rights activism prompted death threats from white supremacist organization Black Legion, forcing the family to relocate twice before Malcolm's fourth birthday. And we're still experiencing this trauma. Can you imagine being a child and people coming to attack you, burning your house and dragging your family members and loved ones out of the house and lynching them and brutalizing people? I can't believe that we still have to experience things like this now. Just thinking about the people in Mississippi and Madison County, cops coming in the house choking you, just raiding your house like it's a slave cabin. We're still living in these days. It's ridiculous. I'm sick of this. And you should be too. But we should organize. So we're honoring Malcolm X as our African spirit person for tonight. So, Scotty, can we play that clip?
I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the Black Revolution and the Negro Revolution. There's a difference. Are they both the same? And if they're not, what is the difference? What is the difference between a Black Revolution and a Negro Revolution? First, what is a revolution? Sometimes I'm inclined to believe that many of our people are using this word revolution loosely, without taking careful consideration what this word actually means and what its historic characteristics are. When you study the historic nature of revolutions, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words. You may devise another program. You may change your goal and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Number one, it was based on land, the basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution, what was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what a revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. Just a moment. the Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. Long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood. You bleed when the white man says bleed. You bite when the white man says bite. And you bark when the white man says bark. I hate to say this about us, but it's true. How are you going to be nonviolent in Mississippi as violent as you were in Korea? How can you justify being nonviolent in Mississippi and Alabama when your churches are being bombed and your little girls are being murdered? And at the same time, you're going to get violent with Hitler and Tojo and somebody else that you don't even know. If violence is wrong in America, violence is wrong abroad. If it's wrong to be violent, defending black women and black children and black babies and black men, then it's wrong for America to draft us and make us violent abroad in defense of her. The Chinese Revolution. They wanted land. They threw the British out, along with the Uncle Tom Chinese. Yeah, they did. They set a good example. When I was in prison, I read an article, and don't be shocked when I say I was in prison. You're still in prison. That's what America means, prison. When I was in prison, I read an article in Life magazine showing a little Chinese girl, 9 years old. Her father was on his hands and knees, and she was pulling the trigger because he was an Uncle Tom Chinaman. Yeah. When they had the revolution over there, they took a whole generation of Uncle Toms, right. Just wiped them out. Yeah. And within 10 years, that little girl became a full-grown woman. No more Toms in China. And today is one of the toughest, roughest, most feared countries on this earth by the white man, because there are no Uncle Toms over there. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward all research. And when you see that you got problems, all you have to do is examine the historic method used all over the world by others who had problems similar to yours. And once you see how they got theirs straight, then you know how you can get yours straight. Please. There's been a revolution, a black revolution, going on in Africa. In Kenya, the Mau Mau were revolutionaries. They were the ones who made the word Uhuru. They were the ones who brought it to the fore. The Mau Mau, they were revolutionaries. They believed in scorched earth. They knocked everything aside that got in their path. And their revolution also was based on land, a desire for land. In Algeria, the northern part of Africa, a revolution took place. The Algerians were revolutionaries. They wanted land. France offered to let them be integrated into France. They told France to hell with France. They wanted some land, not some France. (Laughter) and they engaged in a bloody battle. So I cite these various revolutions, brothers and sisters, to show you, you don't have a peaceful revolution. You don't have a turn-the-other-cheek revolution. There's no such thing as a nonviolent revolution. Only kind of revolution that's nonviolent is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution based on loving your enemy is the Negro Revolution. The only revolution in which the goal is a desegregated lunch counter, a desegregated theater, a desegregated park, and a desegregated public toilet. You can sit down next to white folks on the toilet. That's no revolution. Revolution is based on land. Land is the basis of all independence. Land is the basis of freedom, justice, and equality. The white man knows what a revolution is. He knows that the black revolution is worldwide in scope and in nature. The black revolution is sweeping Asia, sweeping Africa. It's rearing its head in Latin America. The Cuban Revolution, that's a revolution. They overturned the system. Revolution is in Asia. Revolution is in Africa. And the white man is screaming because he sees revolution in Latin America. How do you think he'll react to you when you learn what a real revolution is?
Right, and that was Brother Malcolm L. Hodge, Malik Shabazz. Our African spirit honoree for tonight. Love here, Malcolm. You know, my idea of a perfect date or a beautiful evening with a gentleman friend or suitor would be to sit back and listen to some Malcolm and just analyze some of his speeches and have discussion around some of his topics and his thoughts. Just to have one of those conversations, that would just be so grand to me. I would just love that, Astrid. I would just love that, be able to sit down with a brother and talk about some Malcolm. I was involved with a brother like that. That was a good experience, being able to sit down and have those kinds of conversations about blackness and black thought, black consciousness, our culture, what's going on, our social ills, being socially aware. So that was beautiful. That was beautiful. And speaking on that, because I was speaking to a brother who he's not what some people would say equally yoked with his mate, and my thing is, because he's quote unquote like aware, socially aware, conscious, as some people may say, but she's not. So as a brother, Astro, could you find yourself in a relationship with someone who's they don't have to be on the same level that you're on, but at least somewhat aware or would like to be more aware? Could you find yourself being in a relationship with someone who's just not into black culture, black consciousness, or anything like that at all, anything having to do with blackness? Could you be in a relationship with someone like that?
Short answer is no. Quite honestly, a relationship is a partnership and a bonding and a building between two people. So it's reciprocal. It goes both ways, the growing and developing and the evolution of two people together. You know, so as far as a queen for myself, a black queen for myself, she'd be able to, you know, the expectation is to be able to grow, develop, and mature in all those things together, you know. So she teaches me, I teach her. Because, you know, every blade of grass grows at its own pace. But just a mutual respect and a love, a black love for our people is the foundation for that.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. For myself, it would be very, very difficult for me to be in a relationship with someone that didn't have any kind of connection to culture and blackness and was totally opposed to any conversations around blackness. I couldn't deal with it. Or, conscientious stupidity or sincere ignorance. I make him deal with a little bit, but no, you just don't want to know anything. You have no concern, no desire to know anything or make any kind of positive difference in black life. I couldn't deal with that at all. I couldn't. Because one of my goals is to leave something for our offspring, for our children. I don't have any children, but I say for our offspring, the children, to leave something for them, to have something for them so that they will not have to continue begging people for jobs. I really feel that we have to create jobs for our people. As the Panthers used to say, and as the brothers and sisters used to say, focus on creating jobs for our people. Make sure that they're skilled and prepared to be able to take care of themselves, be able to create for themselves, and not having to constantly go with their head in their hands, begging, please hire me, please hire me. I'll be a good worker. And then once you're hired on the job, all they do is worry the hell out of you, working you to damn death. So, we have to create our own. And I know everybody doesn't have that entrepreneurial spirit. So what I say to that is, again, if we create jobs for our people, and we think like what you said, Astro, being a family, and then we practice that nepotism as people did in, Green, what am I trying to say, with Black Wall Street, then... Again, that would advance us. I could see us improving our lot. But if we continue to be separate and continue to assimilate and feel like, oh, well, everything is fine and be complacent and, oh, there's no struggle, I don't have to fight for anything, everything is fine, oh, that didn't happen to me, it didn't happen to anybody in my family, so I'm okay, I'm not worried about it. Having that type of attitude, that's detrimental to us as a people, in my opinion. What are your thoughts, Ryan? I pretty much know what you feel. I just want to hear you speak it.
Speak what exactly? What are you talking about?
Just speaking on us, ways that we can come together.
Two words, black love.
I love black love. Oh, my God, black love is beautiful. Oh, yes, I'm a fan of black love. That's the key. That's the key. Black love uniting and us working together, men and women, coming together, bringing it all together as one. And when we have that black love and we love on each other and respect each other more, now that's what I'm talking about. Now that's an advancement, and that will advance us as a people. Black love. Give me that good old black love. It was something else I wanted to mention too, Astro, for the month of May. May 13th is a day that we must remember and make significant in our lives, as well as May 19th, Malcolm X's birthday. On May 13th in 1985, Astro, a bomb was dropped on a row house in Philadelphia. unleashing a relentless fire that eventually burned down 61 houses and killed 11 people, including 5 children, and injured dozens, and destroyed a neighborhood. This happened to the MOVE organization in Philadelphia, which was a black liberation group that preached revolution and advocated the return of a natural lifestyle. The MOVE people, to me, they were so beautiful because they would even feed the birds. They would feed, and that's when I started feeding birds, because I didn't used to feed birds until I read about the MOVE, how they fed the birds. They fed the stray dogs and cats. They took care of the animals. They were a family. They were a family, and they lived communally. And for some people may think, oh, I couldn't imagine living with a group of people. And I to myself, I'm an only child. I've never had to live with a group of people. I may find it a little difficult, but if it was all for a good cause, I could do it. I probably could do it. And the MOVE people vowed to lead a life uninterrupted by the government, police, or technology. Now, the MOVE people, they had to move around from the house on Osage. I forgot what street they were living on before they lived on the Osage. But some of the neighbors were in support of them, and some of the neighbors were not in support of them. Some of the neighbors were often calling the cops on them. The MOVE people had to endure the terroristic attacks from, his name just escaped me just that quick, Rizzo. Mayor Rizzo, who was just like this Klansman, and then Mayor Good, which was another black Klansman. He was a black Klansman. So in 1985, the bomb was dropped on the MOVE people, May 13th. So I want to salute those brothers and sisters, Pam Africa, Ramona Africa. I want to salute all of those, but Debbie, one of them just passed recently, too. But if you're not familiar with the MOVE organization, you can always YouTube MOVE Philadelphia, and hey, you'll be able to watch it. But if you're not familiar with them, I would definitely say research MOVE, M-O-V-E, MOVE. And Michael Ward, he was one of the survivors of that attack, but he was found dead in 2013. And I remember when that happened, and I thought that was kind of strange, because he was found dead in a jacuzzi on a cruise ship. I was like, I wonder, was he getting ready to come out and speak on something? You know, it just sounds strange. I'm always suspicious, Astro. I'm just always suspicious of certain stories that come out. I don't buy some of this stuff. That's why I don't watch all that corporate media. It's something... All of it's fake news to me, if you ask me. So, but any updates from your side of the world, Astro? Anything you'd like to share with the people? I always have some enlightening words for us.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, back to Malcolm X. Okay, so listen carefully to one of his quotes. He said he uses a metaphor about coffee, about the black struggle in America specifically. He says, it's like when you've got some coffee that's too black, which means it's too strong. What do? You integrate it with cream. You make it weak. But if you pour too much cream in it, you won't even know you ever had coffee. It used to be hot. It becomes cool. It used to be strong, but it becomes weak. It used to wake you up. Now I put you to sleep. So our unity and our very selective process in building our organizations, our nations, and our communities is really the hallmark of the strength of our black nation and our global black family. Notice you use the word integrate with cream very selectively as well. When we have all these others that want to distract and circumvent the strength, the power, and the unity of black love, those who want to call you a racist in reverse, all of these confusion tactics is really to weaken the strength of the black nation. So don't go down for the swirl, brothers and sisters. Stay black and stay strong, like that hot cup of coffee.
Stay black and stay strong. Speaking of the integration and assimilation, you know, there are many people that feel that integration was one of the worst decisions we ever could have made as black people. Before integration, you know, we had our own stores. We shopped with each other because we were forced to shop with each other for the most part. We had to hire each other, work together as a community and as a family, as we've been discussing tonight. What are your thoughts on separation and versus integration, Astra?
Look, it's really simple. Everybody has their own supply lines. Everybody has their own community. Every community has 15, 16 changeovers of the currency before it leaves the community. These are things that economic practices, political practices, social practices that we need to continue to do, participate, and escalate as people.
Well, I would definitely
building our own institution. Building our own institutions in schools, building our own institutions in the labor force, building our own institutions in self-government, self-defense, community activism, health. All these things need to be black-owned, black-supported, and black-funded. All right.
So having our own institutions, and particularly schools, is something that I'm certainly an advocate of, because I have to quote Malcolm, we can't depend on our enemy to teach us. So I'm certainly an advocate in terms of us having our own schools. I remember when I was in Memphis, there were some sisters, they had a Marcus Garvey like prep school. The school is entitled Marcus Garvey Prep School, something like that. And I was so proud of them for putting that school together. I think it was a charter school. But to have that school, and it was just a small school, but they would have all these community events where people could come in and just speakers, the vendors, performances, everything. So people in the community could participate in all of the events, come to the school. It was open. The children were just like a different breed of children, because they were having that black knowledge instilled in them daily, and they were taught black culture to be proud of being black. And I sincerely, sincerely believe that the more we instill that in our children, the stronger they will become, the better they will be, the better they'll be able to deal with these attacks that they're faced with. Because if somebody comes to your child and calling them ugly and you look like a monkey or whatever, you lack this and all, they should be able to handle that and not let anyone offend them like that, not let anyone try to debase them in that type of way, by simply saying, as we've been talking about tonight, you can spout off your culture. We're the creators of culture, creators of medicine, art, dance, you name it. I'm like Shirley Caesar, you name it. Creative farming, sewing, weaving, toilets, irrigation systems, you name it. We can go down the line. So when you know who you are, where you come from, you can defend yourself in an articulate way and get them up off you. Because I know what I would say. I don't have to say it right now. But I know what I would say. I know exactly what I would say. And our children need to be prepared. And adults, too, I believe, because some of these adults don't know what to say either. But, again, I think that's all about design. All about design. If you don't know your history, you're not aware of where you come from, how to defend yourself. I see all of these young other white children studying all kinds of, martial arts, at the gun range. They out in the parks practicing target shooting and rolling on the ground like they're in combat training. Being prepared. And we need to focus more on preparing our children. I know some people are. I know they are. I know this for a fact. But I would like to see more. I would like to see more of that. That's my hope. That is my hope. So, Malcolm X, let me see. I have another quote that I wanted to read on Malcolm X. Let's see. Where's my quote? Okay. I feel like a man who has been asleep somewhat and under someone else's control. I feel that what I'm thinking and saying is now for myself. Before, it was for and by the guidance of Elijah Muhammad. Now I think with my own mind, sir. Malcolm X. Think with your own mind, people. Think with your own mind. Be yourself. Know who you are. Know thyself and believe in yourself. All right. Let me see. Was there another? Let me give out the phone number again. 866-510-9025. If you have any comments on our topic tonight, we've been talking about black culture. What is it to be black? Having that black culture. Scotty said black culture is not fighting in the club. Black culture is not what? Eating collard greens or fried chicken. That's black culture. Black culture is so much more than that. What is black culture to you? We want to hear from you. What is your definition of black culture? And also, this is a question, Astro, that I've been asking people. Do you think that being quote-unquote conscious, is that trendy? Is that something that sounds good for right now, for people to be in the movement? And I keep hearing a lot of young people saying, stay woke. So is that trendy? And also, if it is trendy, I've heard some people also say, if it is trendy, then let it be trendy, as long as it'll pull people into the movement. So let me see, Scotty, you want to give your definition on black culture? I want to hear this.
Yes, using culture as the root word in the definition of culture is high intellectual achievement regarded collectively. So that, depending upon what group you belong to. So yes, black is a subculture in the United States. You hear a lot about European culture or African culture. That's African culture on the continent. But in terms of black culture is unique. That is enslaved Africans and free black people creating a culture that was unique to this, what they call American continent. So collectively on this continent, what would I consider as high intellectual achievement? But the collective writings of black writers like Phyllis Wheatley and Alice Walker and others who have created, you know, works of either history or fiction and put it to pen and paper. Poetry, we talk about the Harlem Renaissance. That's part of black culture. Jazz music, rock and roll, R&B, that's black culture because that's high intellectual achievement in the arts. Black filmmakers, some would consider Spike Lee a high intellectually achieving black filmmaker. There's some others, name some of them, the Van Peebles brothers, whether or not you like some of the
Mario Van Peebles and his father Melvin Van Peebles.
Yes.
And you know what, Scotty, recently I just found out about Oscar Michelle Show, who the Oscar is named after. Oscar Michelle was one of the first black filmmakers.
Really? So the Oscar's named after
a black man. Yeah.
A black filmmaker.
Right.
But that just goes to what Black Astro was saying, that they copy everything. They copy everything. They recycle it. So, again, if you don't know your history, you don't know yourself. We have a unique history here as black people on this continent. Is it connected to and have elements of what's practiced on the continent of Africa? Of course, because we're African descended people. But we created a culture on this continent that is unique and pretty much copied across the world, whether it's the good or the bad, or the bad elements. But that's when Western media corrupts the image of our art and high intellectual achievement, and they send it across the world to places like Africa, and then you got people in Africa sagging their pants thinking that's part of black culture. It is technically a part of black culture in the rap culture, but rap is like a subculture and of black culture. I say subculture because it's not high intellectual achievement. You know what I'm saying? It is a whole subculture around that gang, you know, that gangster rap, you know, and all that type of stuff. But I consider culture to be, the definition says, high intellectual achievement. It don't take too much intellectual capability to say the N-word and B-word and H-word over and over in nursery rhymes to a beat. I would not include that as black culture because it has to be intellectual achievement in the arts. Think about our historians like John Henry Clark, who along with Malcolm X founded the AAU, the Organization for African American Unity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
exactly.
So we have black architects. Design buildings. We, you know, black people did design the pyramids, but we've also designed buildings. A famous architect from my area, his name is Harvey Gantt. He once was the mayor of Charlotte, but he still runs an architecture firm, and that's how he, you know, became, before he was mayor, he was an architect, and he has designed some buildings. So that's what, and black painters, but yeah, high intellectual achievement in the arts. Nina Simone, you know, so that's my answer on what black culture is.
And you know what, just speaking on the architecture, architectural achievements, when we look at wrought iron, like wrought iron doors, the wrought iron around, uses gates. That's a part of black culture because when our people were dispersed around the world, they brought their craft, metallurgy, using metals and iron and designing and crafting it in different fashions. That wrought iron that we see is actually the different African symbols that were representative of their cultures that they came from. And a lot of that information like that has been hidden from us. I don't see people like going around, or we never were taught like as children, oh yeah, look at that wrought iron right there. you know, your people created that, and that symbol right there, that signifies, identifies that this was a group of people that came from this part of Ghana or that part of Angola. And so all of that type of history is hidden from us. So, yes, high achievement in arts and architecture, like you mentioned. And so when we look at wrought iron gates now, I was just speaking to a friend of mine about this, and I said, you know, because like right across from where I live, there's some townhouses. I can see them from my patio. There's some townhouses that have this elaborate iron working, this wrought iron. It's beautiful. And I said, you know, we should be able to look at that and say, that comes from such and such tribe, because those are their symbols and that wrought iron, and that's what they used to do so that they could identify each other when they were dispersed to some strange land, and then that way they could connect and they could speak to each other. But we can't do that because that information was hidden from us and lost in time, lost in the barren travels. So, and you spoke about Phyllis Wheatley. Phyllis Wheatley, she was one of the first poets to use what they call iambic, I think it's pronounced iambic Peter. And so the way that her poems, Phyllis Wheatley's poems were always like da 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 da, and that's called iambic Peter. So just brilliant. And I think she started writing poems when she was like 12 or 13 years of age. Brilliant. Just astounded people with her writing. So thank you so much for sharing that and bringing up Phyllis Wheatley. And of course, Nina Simone. We celebrated Nina Simone as an African spirit honoree a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I love me some Nina Simone. I absolutely love her. Well, Astro, do you have any closing comments on black culture or anything else we've discussed tonight, because we're getting ready to wrap it up?
Yes, brothers and sisters, remember that you are the mother and father of civilization and the human family, okay? The human species. Stay strong, stay black. Always remember who you are. Love you.
Thank you, Astro. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We certainly appreciate your time and enjoyed hearing from you. Always uplifting and inspiring and sharing your wisdom and wealth, and we love you. So peace to you, Astro, and peace to you, listeners. Peace to you, Scotty. Namaste to everyone. Namaste, Astro. Namaste, Scotty. Namaste to all of you listening, and we will be back on next week. Celebrate Malcolm's born day this Friday. Listen to some Malcolm. Listen to some of his speeches and interviews, or read his autobiography. May be able to change your life and inspire you to take the Black Brother Challenge and protect the Black family. Peace and good night.